Station for Jazz and Justice, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Hi, this is Miyuki Williams.
And I'm Robin Holden. This is Reggae Music and the Reggae Experience present a WPFW fundraising concert featuring Image Band, Curlew Reggae All-Stars Band, Lady Flame, and Carl Malcolm.
On Saturday, October 5th, 7 p.m. until midnight at King Solomon Lodge, 2245 Rhode Island Avenue Northeast.
Tickets available at Eventbrite by searching WPFW.
All proceeds to benefit WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Peace, this is Atan Thomas, and you're listening to WPFW Washington, your station for jazz and justice.
This is a journey to the sound.
Would you join me, please, in welcoming Eve?
Redeem a full of college, I call you.
I got so much trouble on my mind. Refuse to lose. Here's your ticket.
Amazing.
I didn't know nothing about it.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Say what you say, say what?
I don't want to be like Mike.
Before Magic's knees go permanently south for the winter.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Changing up the guard quicker than fear brings down doo-doo. Young bro.
He never saw Elgin Baylor play during his day, or Oscar Robertson.
Flash the dice roll back. The big O was jackknifing through all them bodies.
I didn't know nothing about it.
We're going to have a great show today, joined by 10-year NBA veteran, author, poet, community staple in this area, Atan Thomas. Thrilled to be with Atan this week. Also joined for the first half hour of the show by somebody who's very popular because every time I'm in the street, people always ask for him. Talking about the coach, Kevin McNutt. People ask for him so much, I just stay at home and lock the doors. I'm tired of answering coach questions like, when is coach coming on the show? And is coach a real person? And can't you get coach off the show all the time? I got to answer questions about coach. So thrilled to have him here this week. We got a heck of a show this week. We have so much to discuss. I don't even know where to begin. We're going to start off by talking about the trade that rocked the NBA, putting the NBA on Front Street during this NFL period that we're in, an election season that we're in, talking about Karl-Anthony Towns going from the T-Wolves to the New York Knicks for Julius Randle, and the man who would have been a folk hero in New York, Dante DiVincenzo. Then we're going to speak a little bit about gambling in the league and what we think about the apps and how easy it is for kids to gamble, and a new change in the new gambling structure, which is players doing gambling ads, active players. What do we think about that? Then we want to talk about a huge story roiling the WNBA, the Women's National Basketball Association, whose union, the WNBPA, is calling for one of the most famous reporters in the United States, Christine Brennan from USA Today, to be banned from post-game press events. Very interesting thing. We want to talk about that, what that's even about. And then before the show ends, we are going to make time to remember a giant's giant, and a giant in more ways than one, the great Dikembe Mutombo, a local connection, of course, Georgetown's own person larger than life, passing away at age 58 from brain cancer. And hey, if we have time after that, I'm very curious what Etan Thomas thinks about the Ta-Nehisi Coates media tour and how that's all been going down. But first, that was a big introduction because there's a lot to discuss. Etan Thomas, how you doing, sir?
What's going on, Dave? You know, let me, since you mentioned it, and honestly, the Dikembe Mutombo, that he was such a great person, you know. There was just you wouldn't have met a greater human being. Like, he genuinely wanted to help everybody in the world. So, you know, yes, everything that he has accomplished on the court, you know, block shot and king, like everything, that was amazing. But anybody that's ever met Dikembe Mutombo knows how special of a person that he was. And you know, my heart really sank when I heard that news. Well, you had heard the story that he had been, you know, in the hospital and he had surgery a few months ago, and you saw, you know, Lonzo Mourning and Patrick Ewing, you know, in the hospital with him, and you saw that. But then to hear that the news that he passed, it was, you know what I mean? It was really one of those moments where you kind of just stop and your heart kind of sinks. But, you know, my heart goes out to his family. His son wrote an amazing tribute for his father on Instagram that, you know, SportsCenter picked up and a lot of people posted. But, yeah, rest in peace to Dikembe. Just a wonderful human being. Just wanted to say that before we got started.
No, let's start by talking about Dikembe. I was going to end with it, you know, the way sometimes we do when a giant from this sports world or the world passes. But as long as we're starting talking about Dikembe, I'll just say that, Etan, I'm sure you met him and spoke to him much more than I did. And if you have anything you want to share on that front, please do. But my one interaction with Dikembe, and it was a close one, we spent the day together at a hotel for an NBA Players Association meeting. It was a union meeting where I was presenting on a panel, actually with Dr. Harry Edwards and a couple other folks. Nick Collison was there, if you remember that name. And Dikembe was there, you know, and such a presence, and people revolved around him. People just circled him like he was a planet, you know, talking to him. And as people might know about Dikembe, you know, he had a smile, a big word in that unique voice of his, that iconic voice of his, and, you know, handshakes for everybody. And what I want to say about the experience of being with him is that he wasn't only somebody who was smiles and handshakes to all the players and all the union people and all the rest of it, because you can imagine they were all kind of crowding around him, wanting to talk to him. But he also, once the union work started, was a very, very serious man. Took it very seriously, took the protection of players very seriously. And as you said, Etan, took the idea of using the largesse from his career to make sure that infrastructure, real infrastructure, was being built in the Congo. And I was just thinking about this the other day, Etan, because Donald Trump issued another one of his racist screeds, and everybody knows he's been attacking the Haitian people to a disturbing and dangerous degree. But he made a comment the other day out of nowhere, one of his crazy comments, where he talked about people from the Congo invading this country. And people from the Congo are destroying the United States. And as if he even could pick out the Congo on a map, as if he knows anything about Congolese history. You know, it's ridiculous. It's just a name that makes white people nervous. The Congo. And then, you know, and it has for over 100 years. The Congo, you know. And it, I was so hurt by this, I mean, I'm hurt by it anyway whenever Trump does this stuff because of the racism. But to have him say it the day after Dikembe's death, to me, it was a reminder not only of how disgusting Trump is, but a reminder of how important Dikembe Mutombo is and how his legacy will always be with us.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. So, Coach, do you have anything you want to add about Dikembe Mutombo? I know you're from a Georgetown Hoops family. He's obviously a giant in that world. Yep. Anything you want to add?
Yep. Look, let me put it in perspective for you. How many cats, in not just the NBA, but in any sport, as professional athletes, has this as their goal in mind post-basketball or post their sports? I want to build a hospital in my country. You dig? This was one of his goals that he said post-basketball that he wanted to do. That just shows you the kind of cat, that you're speaking of. You know, he had that brilliant, brilliant smile that you didn't need lights in the arena. You just ask him to smile, and you got your lighting. You know, and his voice, booming voice. You know, man, where's your microphone? No, that's just his voice. And one thing, you know, and then on the court, you know, one thing that comes to mind is I remember when they upset Denver. I know you got the details better than I do, Dave. And he was on the floor. I guess he got the last rebound of the game or something. And he's on the floor just with a smile, eye-to-eye, clutching the basketball in his face. I don't know. Do you remember what I'm talking about? He was out in Denver.
Of course. It's one of the great iconic scenes in the history of the NBA.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So, go ahead.
Oh, I just to explain why for a moment for the people. Yep. You know, things have changed a little bit. People don't, I think, quite understand how unbelievable this was to happen in 1994, I believe. What people have to understand is that the Seattle Sonics, people thought, were on an express train to the NBA Finals. Mm-hmm. Number one seed, Gary Payton, Sean Kemp, and sure enough, they would make the finals just a couple years later. I mean, this team was stacked. And the Denver Nuggets were the eighth seed, and it was a best of five series, so you only had to win three games.
Mm-hmm.
And my goodness, the Nuggets shocked the world. And one of the reasons why they shocked the world was that, you know, the great Sean Kemp, and he was great, could not score on Mutombo. I mean, Mutombo was such a defensive force in that series that he changed everything. And it allowed other players like Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, who we've talked about often on this show.
Yes, sir.
Yep. And Bryant Stith, if you remember that name.
Yeah, out of Virginia.
Out of Virginia. And one of the great players on that team, who I feel like is a very forgotten player, who just hit clutch shot after clutch shot, was a gentleman by the name of LaPhonso Ellis.
Mm-hmm.
Was fantastic in that series, but it was Dikembe who is the heart and soul of how they were able to do one of the great upsets in the history of the National Basketball Association. And that picture you describe, Coach, of him on the ground holding that ball with a look on his face like he could not even believe that they had done that upset. I mean, I'll never forget it. That's for darn sure.
And the other thing we got to always do, the finger wag that everybody's using now. You my young freshman, you know, block a shot and they give the finger wag. You know what I mean? That was Dikembe. But anyway, I got to hit E for a minute. E,
what's going on, Coach?
Man, it's so good to hear you, man. I listened to the show, Arcad. The last couple of shows, you and Dave have been rolling. I mean, I miss Chuck, but you guys are really doing. But I got to congratulate you on your son at the Mather, but also on his way to Villanova, you know.
Because
of you, and I got nothing but love for you because I know all your work you've done, you know. But I still have not watched Villanova Georgetown tape. That's how hurt we Georgetown people are about that upset. But I ain't mad. I got love for your son. I hope he has a big career. Georgetown, I hope he goes for 20-10, but y'all lose by 10. You dig?
I got you. Understood.
My goodness. Natan, listen to Coach still sour about the 1985.
It still hurts, Dave.
NCAA finals. Good gracious, Coach. next year it'll be 40 years.
That's how Dave rolls. They see the same. His only memories of when he was a 5'9" center in the Bronx. See, things like this don't touch him the way they touch us. You know what I'm saying? He does.
Etan, imagine you're a much older gentleman like Coach. No, I'm just kidding. Imagine you're much older. Etan, imagine in 1985 being mad about something that happened in 1946. Imagine how silly that would be. Now, here's Coach still mad about Gary McLean and Ed Pinckney. It's like, come on, man.
Hey,
let it go, buddy.
Hey, but, see you, Tom. Educate me, Tom. Tell him, man, when we play this game at the level we play, and it was from the heart, man. You know, we remember the losses more than we remember the W's. Is that correct?
No, that's true. That is true.
All right. I'll let this pass. Coach still mad about a game when they had peach baskets. But that's neither here nor there. Etan.
Wait. One thing. Let me say to Coach, you know, every time I see your daughter doing fantastic on ESPN, I always smile and say, I bet Coach is just so proud. I think all the time. And when she took on Stephen A. Smith, when she told him about himself a while ago and she had to school him, I was like, well, I know Coach is grinning from ear to ear.
but yes, I am, as any pop would.
I'm sure you are.
Think about that. But here's the thing. Monica knows Dave, and on her journey, on her path, Dave dropped some heavy, heavy words. And you know this is hard for me to say because I don't like putting butter on Dave. We don't get along that well. He told her. I'm only on today, Etan, because you on, and I hadn't talked to you so long. So let's be clear. But Dave dropped this on Monica when she was just bouncing around, working at the local station here, not even at the station, on cable, trying to, you know, get a start. And Dave said, and hoping Dave, I said right, enjoy the journey and not the finish line. Because if it's all about the finish line, you're going to be miserable. And I'm paraphrasing, correct, Dave?
That is correct. And frankly, I mean, I'll just say, because she is such a known figure, Monica McNutt on ESPN, that even at
and
a very
Knicks,
young
and
age.
And, oh, oh, David, and the Knicks. She does the play-by-play for the Knicks.
Yes. On
radio.
Knicks.
Yep.
What I'll remember about Monica is, you know, I used to see Monica down at Sirius XM. I saw her in the Maryland School of Journalism as a student. And one of the things that she was so frustrated by is that it was so clear. It was clear to everybody. It was clear to the professors at UMD. It was so clear that this was a gigantic shooting star, shining star of a talent that they had in front of them. And yet, even in her 20s, early 20s, Monica was so frustrated that it wasn't going faster because she knew she was that good too. And it made her think about, like, why am I doing this? There's no advancement potential. I'm better than X, Y, and Z. And that's why I said to her what I said, Coach. Like, if you're into the journey, you will get to point B, but you have to love the journey along the way. Otherwise, it'll just be a daily exercise in frustration.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Beautiful word.
So
beautiful, man.
That was the advice. I think I played zero part in her current success. I'm sure she got advice from lots of folks, but I'm proud of the connection. Now, and because she's so good, although I will say this, and I don't care if this sounds harsh, Monica is very smart, and it seems like intelligence is the last thing they're worried about right now on ESPN.
Very well put.
And that makes me worry about her. Legitimately. I mean, it's almost like they have a rule that you're not allowed to make Stephen A. Smith look stupid.
And the thing is, she presented her arguments in an articulate way and made her points. And it was a great moment for not only just the WNBA, not only just, you know, women in journalism, but just as far as almost like standing up to a bully. You know what I mean? I mean that's what I thought of, and the way that she did it, with such class and such, you know, knowledge and such skill, I was super impressed.
Yeah. And
Class, knowledge, and skill. Three words they are not loving at ESPN right now. Sorry. Had to say it. Go ahead, Coach.
And the thing about that, she was being very clear in her statement that flabbergasted Stephen A. was, all she said was like, hey, guys, you guys could have been covering this 3 years ago, because she's been a fan of the WNBA. It didn't have to happen just with Caitlin. And it did. And she magnified it. But it, the league was good. The league was coming on and off the court with the Atlanta ownership, for example, before that. So all she was saying, hey, man, whoa, don't put all the butter on Caitlin. This is, you know, this is good. And for somehow, Stephen just really internalized that and couldn't speak. And then that started all the Fuhrer and networking. And I mean, she even went on John Stewart's show, and John brings in some heavy cats. So and it was a statement that all he could have said was that, well, you know, we have sponsors, and it's not there yet. I mean, it was an easy comeback, but somehow I got lost in the sauce. But anyway, I digress. We got more show, because I really want to hear what Eton's got to say on this gambling thing.
All right. Well, we can go right there, because I know Coach's time is limited, and I know Eton and I can talk about, my goodness, Karl Anthony Towns for Julius Randle. Right.
Oh, yeah. We can go there. Matter of fact, since Eton's here, I'm good. I'm going to hang. For you, Dave, man, Eton, my man.
Oh, then let's go to the big story then. Eton Thomas, Karl Anthony Towns, then on the New York Knicks. Julius Randle and Dante DiVincenzo on the Minnesota Timberwolves, who both teams, top four teams in their respective conferences, I would argue top two. So I ask you, Eton, who is better today in October than they were in September?
Great question. It was a trade that really didn't make a lot of sense to me when I first saw it. I mean, I was shocked like everybody was. And I was like, wait, why would either team do this? It doesn't make much sense.
Exactly.
Like, what's going on here?
Yeah. Who's better, if anyone, is my question to you.
But I don't know if this was necessarily a basketball decision. I think this had a lot more to do with financial. I don't think that they had enough to be able to retain Karl Anthony Towns and keep some of the young players that they wanted to resign, most notably Naz Reid. And I think that was a little bit more of what fueled this, you know, from the Knicks standpoint. I mean, you kind of been waiting for this group to play together. You have the Nova Knicks. Mm-hmm. You have, you've been advertising the Nova Knicks. I just saw them doing this big spread together, all four of them. You're waiting for Julius Randle to come back. He was injured. They did so well last year. The whole talk was, okay, they just needed a few more pieces so they don't have to play everybody Iron Man minutes. You got these new pieces, and then you trade. I don't know from the Knicks standpoint, like, why they would do this. DiVincenzo was being really embraced by the entire Knicks culture as being an icon just because of his style of play. So for the Knicks fans, you know, I know they must be going crazy right now as far as what are they doing. Cat, although he is a great player, I don't know if he fits the Knicks pedigree, the style.
Yes, sir.
You know what I mean? He's not that type of a player that the whole, you know, New York will just embrace. I don't know.
So if someone asked you, hey, Eton, who are the winners and losers in the T-Wolf Knicks trade? Your response would be to be determined, because this 100%. Is just too bewildering for me to get my head around.
100%.
I hear that. Coach, any thoughts on winners or losers before I soliloquy on my thoughts?
Yeah, the Knicks had a hole in the post, so I understand that. But I kind of agree with Eton. Is Cat a post? I mean, he's out there drifting for three pointers. He was reluctant to go in the hole during the playoffs last year. One of the reasons why I think they got bounced early. Randle is much of the same. I've never been a Randle fan. I there's a lot of players that are good, get your numbers. But can they take you to where the Knicks want to get? And I'm not so sure he could ever do that. Cat with the coach, with Tibbs, I think, you know, he might change. Just like, you know, when a player moves from another team, sometimes that's a brand new start and a new a transition takes place. So I agree also with Eitan that DiVincenzo, man, he was playing so well. He's going to be missed more than Randall. But Dave, you're New York, so take the stage, please.
Yeah, like I mean, I've been in group chats with friends of mine, high school friends, and I'll say to what Eitan said, they sound very much like Eitan in being bewildered. Because the team with everybody healthy last year, Julius Randle, OG Anunoby, they went 14-2 altogether against a very tough part of the schedule. Very tough. They weren't beating up the cupcakes of the league. They went 14-2. And then with OG healthy, with Randle out, like all combined, 23-4. So a lot of people saying, let's see them all together. And like you said, Eitan, let's see this Nova Knicks thing with Mikal Bridges. Like, what is this going to look like with these four great players, you know, coming out of Villanova, a championship pedigree coming out of Villanova? Can they bring it to the Knicks? That was going to be such an exciting story. And when you put on top of that, Eitan and coach, the fact that Dante DiVincenzo or Josh Hart was going to be on the bench this year, six man, that would have made for a very strong bench.
Okay, Dave, but you didn't answer the question. Who's in the hole? Because what's the gentleman, I can't think of the name, that was hurt and got hurt, Robinson, or got hurt in the playoffs? And
Mitchell Robinson.
That
I think was a big part of this trade, that they had a big hole at the five.
Right.
They were talking about playing Julius Randle at center. They were talking about playing Precious Achiuwa, who I actually like as a player, but he's 6'7" if he's an inch. I mean, so it's like, who are they going to play at center? And I think it led to a little bit of desperation. Apparently, Leon Rose, the head of the Knicks, like, he's had his eyes on Cat for a long time. Karl Anthony Towns, they go back a long ways, apparently. And for him, this was like a dream to unite somebody who he grew up holding as a baby, Jalen Brunson, and somebody who he's had his eye on since he was a young teenager, Karl Anthony Towns. So I get the sort of personal desire, the goal, this idea, this vision. But man, I mean, losing Randle, who stuck with this team when they were terrible, and transitioned to them being good, and somebody who gave so much back to the city. He found out about the trade the morning he was announcing this massive gift to this school he's sponsoring up in Harlem. I felt so bad for him. He had to answer these questions while he was giving props to the school and what it was doing. And of course, Dante DiVincenzo, I mean, my God, the folk hero that could have been for New York. But the thing that I'm most worried about, Eitan, is that what this does now also to the New York bench, it's like everybody, I thought we were going to finally have depth so we wouldn't have the sort of Tibbs thing of, you know, the playing so hard in the regular season and then breaking down in the playoffs. And then you add someone, Eitan, I hate putting this label on somebody, but Karl Anthony Towns plus the playoffs plus the hot, hot glare of those New York lights makes me extremely nervous.
You know, it's not that he's not going to be the player that he is and capable of being. That's not necessarily my concern. You know, it's just that, is he going to be what the Knicks specifically need? And that's somebody in the paint. You know, I mean, it's he's a great jump shooting big man. You know, yes. I know that Vegas did.
The greatest ever, as he likes
to say. That's what he said. But I mean, they need somebody to get a few rebounds in there, right? You know, I mean,
right.
It's, you know, I know it's a different game now, but I like Precious Achiuwa. You know what I mean? I do like him. I don't know if they're going to play them together. So I don't know if you've really solved your problem.
of not that hole in the middle by adding a cat. That's just
because we have to remember, as we have this conversation, that here he is, an all-pro center for the T-Wolves, the center of their team, not just in position, but in terms of marketing, the face of the franchise, first overall pick, and yet they still bring in Rudy Gobert because they needed a quote-unquote real center. Like, and that's the thing about Cat, is that for all of his physical skills, his defensive reputation is just not good. And then you look at someone like Thibodeau and his love of defense. Woo! And you think about the reputation, an unfair reputation that Cat has for being soft. And you know the first time there's any vulnerability he shows on the court, which of course every player will suffer from eventually. I just think about that New York press and those New York fans. I think about how much they love Dante. And it's just, I worry about it in a big way. I worry about it even while I understand it. And as for the Wolves, before we go to break, you know, this is kind of, I mean, I'm starting to think what they did was kind of brilliant. And I just get your feedback on this. But, you know, they've got a point guard, Mike Conley, who's pushing 40. And his backup point guard, Rob Dillingham, a rookie, you feel like is pushing 14. Dude is so young. I think he's still 18 years old, and he's going to back up a 37-year-old point guard with a team that has championship aspirations. So you bring in DiVincenzo, who can run the point, who can steady them down, and I think he's going to be a story of this season with the Timberwolves. I love DiVincenzo, and I think he's been a different and better player, as has been reported openly, since he was basically Steph's best friend on the Warriors for one season, that just changed his whole thing. So I'm with it from the T-Wolves' perspective, and I'm nervous from the Knicks' perspective.
That's fair.
That's fair. All right. Well, let's go to break right now. When we come back after this, ooh, am I curious what Etan's going to say about this. We have a huge controversy in the media sphere of the WNBA. We're going to speak about that. We also have other topics, oh my goodness, that we want to try to knock down. But for now, we are the Collision. We're going to a station identification break. 89.3 FM, WPFW, your home for jazz and justice, changing the world one broadcast at a time.
So here comes the African giant. Many, many people don't try, but you can't test the African giant. Give me your more logo, logo. You know, get the person when you know. Can nobody do it better? Check a man, see, I know say one day you go better. Go carry Grammy, because anything we better require planning. Don't be, nothing you can do, because God did not go give you more than you can.
We are back here on the Collision, 89.3 FM, WPFW. That was really strong, Etan. What were we listening to?
That was Burna Boy, African Giant. And it's funny that there was a event that I was at, and the Kemba Mutombo was there, and he was just kind of relaxing, being social like he always does. He's very social at different events. And then this song came on, and he stopped. And you would have thought that this was a song about him, for him, by him. And he just started dancing, and you know what I mean? And talking, singing along, and especially the part where it said African Giant, that this was like, and that image really, you know, was like stuck in my head. So I wanted to play that song today.
Wow.
Well done, brother. Well done, brother.
Well done. Quick Dikembe question before we move on to the soap operatics that going on right now in the media world. Etan, what do we lose in losing a man of the emotional, political, and moral weight of a Dikembe Mutombo? What do we lose?
A world ambassador. That's what he was. Ambassador. You know, and he, like I said, he deeply cared about issues around the world and wanted, you know, he was somebody who his heart, like if you could spread it around to other people, you know what I mean? He's one of those where you would, it's like infectious the way that you saw how much he cared. Just a genuine human being. And it's just, you know, that's what we lose with a Dikembe Mutombo.
Yep.
Wow.
And let me jump in on that, the second that, Etan, because you can also say all that for John Amos. Now, we got to acknowledge Pete Rose because he was a great at his sport, but John Amos was the same in losing him. I guess it was earlier, but we found out about it this week.
Yes.
Same thing, class guy, where Tombo was doing it with a basketball. John Amos was doing it on the stage, and it really hits home with me on him from this standpoint. I got into him with obviously everybody good times, but when because he was a positive, and he said this on some of the tributes I saw, that you know he wanted to be a positive role model, a black role model, which we were even in the early 70s when good time was on, we were devoid of pretty much on TV. And he was a strong black man, leading his family through hard times, good times, whatever you want to call it. Uh-huh. And then watch this, guys. And when he left, and I forgot how why he left the show or how he left the show, how they wrote about the script. I never watched another episode because they went from him, powerful black man, in that image in the 70s late, and they went to the silliness and foolishness of JJ. So I never watched the show again because that's how much he meant to me. But anyway, I just see parallels between the two. Sorry, I went off script there, boys.
No, that was great. I mean, and really powerful. And you throw in James Earl Jones, who passed away, you know, earlier as well, and just his iconic voice and presence and everything that he has represented. You know, that is such a distinct, powerful voice. And if anybody has ever met him in person, that's his real voice. that's how he spoke. You know what I mean? It's not like something he put on the cameras. That was his voice.
Right,
it was so amazing hearing that. I heard that in person. But we've lost some really serious icons here.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
These past weeks.
Yep.
And if I could just add something about that. In the early 70s, what do you see? You see the government destruction of the Black Panther Party, while you have, as we now know, drugs imported by the U.S. government into Black communities, destroyed families, destroyed fathers in the process. And in the middle of all of this social crisis, you have this character, James Evans, on Good Times, almost like this force of will against the tides of destruction that this country was drumming up. And that really mattered to people. The same way on a film front, James Earl Jones mattered to people. In a lot of ways, they were two sides of the same coin.
Yes, sir.
And that's why it was so important for Eddie Murphy, who with every year that passes, I love more on a personal level, just learning more about him. Eddie Murphy, it was so important to him in coming to America to make sure that you had James Earl Jones, the father figure from the African continent, and John Amos, the father figure who, of course, owned McDowell's, the McDonald's place, in coming to America. You know, that was intentional, that they were both in that film together. So, yeah, losing a giant and John Amos, you can't say it loudly enough.
Agreed. Well said.
And, yeah, thank you. And also, real quick, he was an actor of great range, not just James Evans.
Yep.
Like, his performance in Roots, which would tear your heart out. But then I'm also going to throw in his performance in Die Hard 2, as one of the bad guys, and it is a chilling performance. As good a bad guy as you'll see. Ooh, send your blood chilling. So, I mean, an amazing actor and a hell of a loss.
Definitely.
But definitely. I got to get your opinion, and I'm so glad you mentioned that, Coach. Off script, on script, who cares? John Amos and James Earl Jones deserve all the mentions. I'll throw to you, Atan, because I'm so curious your thoughts about this.
Okay.
Because you've been in this world before, and I've got strong opinions. I'm going to keep them to myself. You have a situation in the WNBA right now where one of the most well-known, and you have to almost say, like, iconic women's sports reporters in the country, Christine Brennan from USA Today, the players, through the expression of the union, actually want her banned from post-game media events because they feel like she is really – two reasons. One, they feel like she's very racially insensitive to what the players have gone through this year in terms of the amount of racism and sexism that's been thrown on them in this Caitlin Clark era, where Caitlin Clark has brought in fans who certainly do not have the best interests of the whole league at heart, you have to say. And you pile on top of that, that Christine Brennan is writing a book about Caitlin Clark. So the league believes that a lot of, not the league, I should say, the players believe that a lot of her questions are kind of, and I can't say this word on PFW, but you'll follow, let's just say a bleepster. Y'all know what I mean. A bleepster, a bathroom stirrer, if you will. And so she's asking people these questions, players' questions, just to stir up animosity so she has more info for her book.
Yeah.
So first the players spoke out and said, no, we don't want her in here anymore, like plying this kind of nonsense. And then the union came out with a formal request. But since then, you've had tons of reporters come out and say, stop being babies, answer the tough questions. And also, this is Christine Brennan we're talking about, not some person who's sliding up here from, like, you know, one of the right-wing rags like Newsmax or Fox or something, just trying to upset people. This is a legit USA Today reporter. But the players are like, no, there's just too much disrespect at work. And then the media says, well, disrespect is frankly part of our job description. You know, we're not here to make you comfortable. So a lot of issues at play, Atan. And the union coming forward was also something that was unexpected. What's your take on the whole imbroglio? And have you ever had personal connections with Christine Brennan?
I've seen her before. She's been around for a very long time. I saw the interview that she did with Dejanay Carrington after the Caitlin Clark eye-poking incident, I guess we could say like that. And I did think she was trying to fan the flames. I thought she was. I saw it. I was like, oh, Lord, she said that she did it by accident. So what happened was, you know, for those that don't know, Dejanay Carrington was playing against, defending Caitlin Clark. She tried to defend her, poked her in the eye, okay? What's been going on this season is anytime Caitlin Clark has been fouled, the entire media has treated her like this delicate flower, like all and painted this picture as though all of these big black, ferocious, jealous, angry black women in the WNBA are out to get poor Caitlin Clark, who all just wants to play basketball and she just, you know, needs everybody else to come to her defense. The white damsel in distress. That's what they've been painting. So when she came and she interviewed Dejanay, the way that she framed the question, she answered it. She said, no, I didn't mean to do it. Why would I do it on purpose? It was an accident. And then she followed up. So she's like, well, were you laughing about it? And then she said, but what do you think about Caitlin Clark? And the way that she followed up the questions was, and I saw it, and I thought the same thing. I was like, huh, that was a little weird. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But
okay.
But apparently she's been doing that consistently throughout the league with WNBA players. Around the Caitlin Clark issue. Now, if she's trying to gain some quotes for her book, she should say that from the beginning. Okay, I'm writing a book about Caitlin Clark. Mm-hmm. Would you like to add some commentary for that purpose? That's the way that she should do it.
but not just to throw it in any way. She's supposed to be talking about the game, and then she throws in Caitlin Clark when she was supposed to be, you know, Caitlin Clark's not even playing right now. Why are we talking about Caitlin Clark? So the way that she's doing it, you know, I think it is a little bit unprofessional. You know, there is a way that you can do this where it doesn't come across the way that it is. So do players have a right to get irritated with that? Of course they do. Why wouldn't they? I was listening to a few members in the media and acting like it was so ridiculous for the players to have an issue with this. And the media has to do their job, and these players are just being so sensitive and everything like that. And that's your job to answer our questions. I was like, yeah, but, you know, you, sometimes you're just trying to agitate. Like when I was watching Draymond Green interview, and the reporter was obviously trying to agitate them. But that's when you have... Where's the media person to cut it short? Say, okay, that's enough. Let's move to the next question. Isn't that their job to do, the media correspondent, whatever
their person? Sure is.
So where is that person to kind of, you know what I mean, police that, where reporters are going, okay, this is going a little bit left. Let me come in here to direct it. That's what I want to know, because each team has that person that has that job, and it doesn't seem like they're doing their job.
Right. Mm. Coach, you want to throw in before I give my two cents?
Yep. First of all, on Caitlin, I agree everything that Eton said. And let me tell you something. Caitlin talks more trash than Larry Bird. So she's not no soft flower, okay?
Yep.
And to referees, to during the game, I see it. As a referee, I see it. You know, and she got some lips. So she's a tough customer. She don't need all this sympathy that she gets when she gets bumped. That's one. Two, the ladies in that league are uniform like no other sport, professional sport. So they're not going to get a ban on Christine. They're not going to get a ban for the locker room. But here's how they do. If she's coming in and she's looking for some juice for a book, you say, what about Caitlin? And the players, as one, put the word out, say this: I wasn't playing Caitlin tonight. That's it. You know, we played the sky. We played somebody else. We played New York. And just say, why are you asking about Caitlin? We didn't play Caitlin tonight. You want to talk about tonight? Let's talk about tonight. And then when they do play the Fever, you know, just say no comment. If they think that is about her book, that's the way to shut it down. You're not going to get her banned. That's going to do her favor. And that's the way I would handle that.
Yeah, I mean, Coach, I think you just hit on something very important at the end there. But before I jump on that, I want to ask Eitan, because of Eitan, your experience working with the National Basketball Players Association for many years. What do you think about the union, the Women's National Basketball Players Association, coming out with their own statement calling for a banning of Christine Brennan and having the union take that leadership role? What do you think about that politically and tactically, the union taking on that responsibility?
Well, they're listening to the players. If that's the way the players feel, then that's the direction that the union is going to support. I don't have any problem with that. Well, and I see a lot of people in the media having an issue with that. listening to Frank Isola, and you know, in particular, he's been going off your tangents about that, and they've been joking like it's so ridiculous that the players feel that way. But no, if that's the way that they feel, and this is the problem that I have, is that people respect how athletes feel until they disagree with something that they've expressed.
Thank you, brother.
Amen. Amen.
That bothers me so much. I can't say it enough, but yeah, that's
you mean what you're saying, Eitan, to be clear, is that like you don't have fans that are actually listening, where maybe they have no opinion about this, and then all of a sudden the players say something and they knee-jerk against it because it doesn't hit with their personal political views instead of actually listening to what the players are saying.
Right, right. They just disagree with what the players are saying. I mean,
now,
go ahead.
My concern, Eitan, and I really want to know if you think this is hot garbage, because, you know, very much respect your opinion and you've got a much more of an inside view of this. But I'm somebody who sides with the players. I don't like the way Christine Brennan, who I do know pretty well, I don't like the way she's handled this all season. I get the players' frustration. I think the question to Dejanay Carrington was, frankly, quite out of bounds and just trying to start some stuff, which mission accomplished. The union taking it on as they did, I worry, makes Christine Brennan the victim or look like the victim. When the people being victimized are frankly the players by this line of dialogue and the centering of Caitlin Clark. And so if just the players had spoken out, it puts the focus on the power of the media to attack these players. And now everything is switched to the power of the union to punish the media. I don't know. I just wish, and I know some of this is the media's fault, not the union's fault. So I shouldn't even be blaming the union. It's good that the union is standing up for its players, but I just don't like the dynamic as it's working right now.
I mean, but I'm someone who I've gone to players during games and interviewed them for a book that I was writing. I've done that. So I can speak directly to that. But it's not like I snuck the question in. I told them from the beginning, I'm writing this book about athletes and activism. Would you want to be a part of it? And if I can get a few quotes from you about it. And then they have the right to say either yes or no. I think if she took that type of approach, it would be completely different. She's interviewing people in post games. They're talking about the playoffs. They're talking about something else. And then she starts all of a sudden just talking about Caitlin, you know what I mean, Clark. That's not the way to do it.
No, it's not. It's not. It actually reminds me of a story where I once went to a press conference in Gary Williams of Maryland, and there was this young reporter doing an article about a certain Georgia Tech freshman. This is how long ago it was, Etan. A certain Georgia Tech freshman named Chris Bosh.
Okay.
And so, God, I'm old. And so he's
No, you're
doing,
not. I am.
Yeah, you're old. Coach is like Chris Bosh. Isn't he a rookie? So I know the time gets a little confused, Coach. But this kid asks a question of Gary Williams about what's it like to play against Chris Bosh, because he's clearly doing a Chris Bosh story. Mm-hmm. And Gary Williams answers politely. And then the kid interrupts. I think it was like the late George Michael from Sports Machine, you know, famous, legendary sport. He like interrupted him and said, I have another question about Chris Bosh. And then Gary Williams was just like, what? Is this the Chris Bosh press conference all of a sudden?
I'm mad at that.
Yeah, Gary went from being kind to being a little bit peeved. And then everybody laughed. And then the reporter kind of slunk into the background. Somebody's got to say that to Christine Brennan. Like, what? The Fever aren't even playing. What? This is the Caitlin Clark show all of a sudden.
Right. I mean, there's ways to do it, just not the way that she's doing it.
No. And don't ask Gary Williams questions about an 18-year-old freshman either, because he doesn't have time for that. Right. One of the lessons of the story. Well, we're running out of time. Before we go, just a quick shout-out to Magic Mike on the Wheels of Steel. I know he's following Jaden Daniels very closely, the quarterback of the Washington Commanders. My latest Jaden Daniels stat, to blow everybody's mind, I know I did one last week, is that Jaden Daniels the last 2 weeks has thrown each game, at least he's completed about 82% of his passes, I believe the number is. He's completed at least 82% the last 2 weeks. Etan Thomas, I'll throw it to you. How many times in NFL history has a quarterback thrown for at least 82% in two straight weeks?
Oh, I do not know the answer to that, but I believe you do.
Yes, I do. The answer, sir, is zero. Here's this young man. I can't get over this, Etan and Coach. He's a rookie. And this is his third and fourth games as a professional. He does something that no quarterback, Brady, Manning, whatever, has ever done before. That kind of blows my mind, sir.
Yeah, well, what blows my mind is the way you just did a Christine Brennan to Etan. He's a football cat, first and foremost, and then you throw a
basketball cat
on him, you know, about Jaden Daniels. You just wanted to use him as a stage prop so you can get that in. I see what you're doing.
That's a lie. That's a total lie. Yes, I did throw it to Etan with, you know, it was a little bit rhetorical. So he would say, who? And then I could answer and sound all smart. Maybe I did do that. I cop to that. But to call me a Christine Brennan, how dare you, sir? How dare you?
Fight words. Yeah.
And it wasn't no maybe. It was intentional. And you went to him instead of me because you knew I would react his way because I don't particularly like you. So there, let's be clear what we're doing here. Let's stop playing games.
No, No, I went to Etan because you're on the phone and you sound like you're trapped in a basement by J.D. Vance or something. And in his secret ugly dungeon, because I'm sure he has one. And Etan sounds so crystal clear. That's why I did it.
My man said, I thought the rules were that we weren't going to fact check.
Well done, baby. Boom.
So funny.
What an answer. That's up there now with concepts of a plan.
Yes, definitely.
Indeed. Well, we're having too much fun here. It's time for us to go. Any last words from anybody?
No, great show as always.
For everybody out there listening, and I say this for Coach in particular, please stay frosty.
Not the Wendy's commercial again. Get out of here.
Please. Being frosty is bigger than Wendy's. It's about cool. Courage under fire, which hopefully Carl Anthony Towns will show this season. Although I'm nervous. For everybody out there listening, again, please stay frosty. We are out of here. Peace.
What the world?
The Institute for Policy Studies, Busboys and Poets, and The Nation invite you to a conversation between author and activist Bill Fletcher Jr. and labor historian Dana Frank, discussing Frank's new book, What Lessons We Can Learn from the Great Depression, Stories of Ordinary People and Collective Action in Hard Times, on Tuesday, October 8th at 6:30 p.m. Professor Frank explores how ordinary people working collectively met the crisis head-on and how we can apply those lessons in the challenges we face today. The book event, What Can We Learn from the Great Depression, Stories of Ordinary People and Collective Action in Hard Times, Tuesday, October 8th, 6:30 to 8 p.m. at the 5th and K Street Bus Boys and Poets. For more information and a way to RSVP is online, ips-dc.org/Great Depression Lessons. That's ips-dc.org/Great Depression Lessons. WPFW is your station for jazz and justice, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
This Saturday, October the 5th, there will be a national summit on gun violence and racism in person at the Metropolitan AME Church, 1518 M Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C., and online at forsummit.org. The summit is a unique, solution-driven gathering of activists from D.C. and across the country, sharing policies and strategies successful in reducing violence and saving lives. The event is sponsored by the Fellowship of the Reconciliation under the leadership of Reverend Hagler with many others. Registration is at forsummit.org. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
On Sunday, October 6th, 9 a.m. until midnight, WPFW presents De Colores, celebrating Hispanic Heritage Month. Our beloved Sunday programmers will explore the rich musical palette of Latinx artists, from the strings of Villa-Lobos to Salsera Graciela, to the Cuban jazz and electronic sounds of Omar Sosa. That De Colores, celebrating Hispanic Heritage Month on WPFW. Building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
This is what WPFW sounds like without volunteers.
This is what WPFW sounds like with volunteers. Help WPFW avoid the sound of static and continue the mission of building a better world, one broadcast at a time, by becoming a phone volunteer today. Information and registration at 202-588-0999, extension 1008, or via email at